And we thank you for joining us once again for our conversation with Governor Daniels. Thank you very much for being with us this evening. We are once again statewide on the radio, WIBC Network Indiana, several TV stations across the state helping us take this message as we come toward the end of your first year in office. What has been the most difficult part for you with this first year? Anything that stands out?
Well, we had a lot of difficulties, but I'm not going to complain about any of them. Most of them worked out well in the end. And it's been, by most people's accounts, whatever their views, the most eventful and, in many respects, historic year Indiana's seen in a long time. And that was necessary, and in our judgment, that a lot of change was required. So change is never easy. It's always difficult. And it's our job to try to pick the right changes, try to help people understand that things can be better. We'll work through this, and let's take a chance on moving forward.
Okay, I think we have another question from WIBC on Monument Circle.
We do indeed. Sheila Morrison, that was our last one. This is Jenny Pruitt from Greenwood, and you have a question on the Motorsports Initiative.
Yes, good evening, Governor. I, like you, am a race fan, and I'm also a marketing consultant and work downtown across the street from the State House. And I saw an Indigo bus this summer that had an ad on the side of it with an unfurled checkered flag that said that it was our other state flag. And I was really impressed, thought it was a catchy phrase, but when I got to really looking at it, I realized it was promoting the state of Ohio, and then that made me mad, because Indiana is known for several things, but one of the things is that it is the home of over 50 dirt and paved racetracks where racers of all ages participate in all types of professional and amateur racing. That Indigo bus made me question why racetracks aren't included in state tourism initiatives like wineries and pumpkin patches that are used to promote agriculture. Does your motorsports initiative, included in your economic development plans, go beyond providing financial and professional assistance to cities and counties that choose to pursue the motorsports industry?
Well, Jenny, thank you. And I think that at a time when we're trying to strengthen and shape up tourism and some undeveloped assets we've got there in Indiana, I think that I certainly, as a fan, can testify that some of the best entertainment we've got is on our 40-odd dirt and asphalt ovals in the state. I've been to many of them myself, and it's a great and affordable night out. Let me say that our motorsports initiative is very much part and parcel of our overall economic development plans. We are right now, probably with North Carolina, the leading state already. And if you tally the number of businesses and the value of what they do in this area, but this is a $30 billion worldwide industry. We've got the three biggest races of their kind in the world, and then those wonderful sort of grassroots tracks that Jenny just talked about. So we are dead serious, and we have been out trying to recruit businesses. Many of them are small niche businesses, but they tend to be high-paying jobs that service this booming industry, and it's a great idea, and I like the tourism angle very much.
Okay. Next question, somebody who works with you and for you in state government, Elizabeth Walker.
Good evening, Governor.
Hi, Elizabeth.
My question is, as Hurricane Katrina and the tornadoes that just hit down in our state, and according to a KPMG report, regarding privatizing mental health facilities, it stated there is a lack of community-based providers throughout the state mm-hmm. to basically render services. And it brings to light in this country and in the state and abroad the real need for timely and effective services for all citizens, and especially the most vulnerable of our community. My question is, Governor Daniels, for the aftermath of privatizing state government and services that will drastically and negatively affect the most vulnerable of our citizens, what is the state's plan mm-hmm. to help those persons, our okay. poor, our mentally ill?
Well, first, Elizabeth, thanks for serving the state. Where do you work?
I work for the Division of Family and Resources.
I appreciate your service. Well, let me say that we believe we have many ways we need to progress in our treatment, certainly of vulnerable children of all kinds, and the mentally ill in particular. As I said, the only area I really campaigned on an increase for was the protection of children. We've had far too many kids lose their lives or be hurt in this state. We've all read those stories, and our hearts have ached about them. And we've already hired over 100 new caseworkers. The biggest caseloads in America are coming down. We got a long way to go, but this is one corner of a very large problem. On the mental health side, we've had some tragedies there too. With the best of intentions, the state has tried to run hospitals. Many of our young people who have mental illness problems have continued to be treated in what most folks feel, and your question indicated, is an outmoded fashion, large institutional settings as opposed to community-based settings. We've got some fantastic community-based folks in this state. They support very strongly the changes that we are making to try to get more of these kids into, let's say, more personal and humane settings in their community. And to the extent that more are needed, I know they'll step forward. This marketplace will respond. We can do much, much better by these kids, and the people who are the advocates for those kids are the ones who have shown us the way and shaped our policy.
Next question comes from Gina Quattrocci, back up at WLFI in Lafayette.
Eric, thank you. Our next question here in Lafayette comes from a Purdue student, Jared Bond. He's studying political science, active with the Young Republicans in college. His question is concerning keeping graduates in Indiana after they graduate. Jared, your question for the governor.
Governor Daniels, first of all, thank you for taking my question. I think this question haunts a lot of college students at this time, and it is there going to be a job for me after I graduate? And so I guess my question is, what is your administration doing to help attract new jobs as well as retain jobs here in the state of Indiana?
Jared, it doesn't just haunt you and your classmates, it haunts me, and it haunts a lot of folks I run into in this state. I've often said, when people ask me, why did you do this, run for office, which I didn't anticipate doing, the single most decisive factor was frustration at watching some of our best young talent leave, I made mention earlier. And I can remember standing in a Kinko's parking lot up in Lake County, Indiana, one of many such experiences, talking to two young Purdue grads, fiancés, on their way to Chicago. He already had a job and she was going looking. Like so many others I meet, it wasn't that they didn't love Indiana, didn't hope maybe one day to come back, but they were worried about the way in which we'd been slipping behind other states. So the heart of that package that I talked about, it starts with jobs and the economy. This year we did a slew of things. We put together a new action agency, did twice as many transactions. Or I should say, as many transactions in one year, more than the previous 2 years put together. We made the state's laws more friendly to R&D. You know, it used to be in Indiana until this year. If you bought a lathe or a drill press, you didn't pay sales tax because we understood that to be a tool of work, and we wanted to make it convenient for people to grow and add those. If you bought an electron microscope or a spectrometer, you did pay sales tax. We didn't look at that as a tool of work. And a lot of changes like that to modernize our economy, make it more receptive to the more diverse jobs that we will need, that a lot of grads from Purdue and our other excellent schools aspire to. So we will never stop doing this. That transportation and roads plan I talked about is the single biggest thing we can do to touch off an economic boom in this state, and I'm going to work on it every day till the legislature passes it.
All right, we have some people in Terre Haute who would love the chance to ask you a question. Great. Mark Allen.
Thanks, Eric. Our first question here in Terre Haute comes from Elmo Hills of Clinton, Indiana, and his question for the governor is about the oversight of charter schools. Elmo?
Good evening, Governor. I'd like to thank you for taking the time to meet with us this evening. My question is about education. The number of children in Indiana being homeschooled is skyrocketing into huge numbers, so say the media. Earlier this year, Indiana was one of 13 states to form a coalition to improve schools by adopting higher standards and tougher examinations. These sessions promoted testing, accountability, and a part of the legislation known as the No Child Left Behind Act. President Bush at this conference said, "I've heard every excuse in the book not to test. My answer is, how do you know if a child is learning if you don't test? Our Indiana homeschool program requires no testing or accountability. The testing would reveal the child-parent success or failure. Governor, isn't it about time to take another look at this program and make the changes to assure that no child is left behind?
Well, I certainly believe in that, and I gave an answer to an earlier question about ISTEP by saying frankly that I probably had a different viewpoint than the lady, that I do agree with you that if we don't check, if there's not accountability in the system, we won't know, and we will lose kids, and that's unacceptable. Now, homeschooling is growing, although it's still a very small part of the Indiana education landscape, maybe 5% or so from the numbers I've seen. I'm going to tell you, having run into hundreds of homeschool kids, many of them are, somebody's doing a great, great job with them. Many of them do take the SAT, and a very high percentage, from every indication I've seen, are going on to college and higher education. So I am not against the idea, and frankly, if I were advising a homeschool parent, I would say, you know, find a standardized test. You ought to know, you want to make sure that you're doing as well as possible by the child you love, and many of them do that. But the basic principle you're talking about is absolutely right, that what is not measured is not likely to improve.
Okay. All right, got another question over here, Governor. Your name and your question.
Lloyd Brown, I'm from Anderson, Governor. With the revenues slowly coming up, more revenues are needed. Mm-hmm. And it appears that the gambling money in Indiana is in the decline, such as at the tracks and at the Hoosier lotteries even being canceled, and the revenues themselves are down. Have we become too dependent on the gambling revenue dollar? And I know that the latest talk is to legalize the eight-liners that are in most bars in every corner of the state, and I know that you've been approached on that. I'd like to know what your position is on that in the future.
Thank you, Lloyd. This is an important problem. Answer for number one, I don't think we are too dependent today, but this is something we ought to watch, and I do not believe we should go any further than we are today. You're quite right. Gambling revenues to the state are uncertain, and they've been weak lately, let's say, and we should not become any more reliant than we have been over the last 10 or 15 years. The issue of the illegal gambling machines that's out there is a very tough one. We have enforced the law on this. It was being ignored before, and I don't know how to operate like that. I've said that I took an oath, and it was a Bible I took it on, to uphold the laws of this state. And so we have told the excise police they are free to enforce that law now where they encounter these machines. Some folks say that, look, it's a fact of life. There are thousands of them. We don't know how many, but it's a lot. And no one knows if they have any chance of winning. It's completely unregulated. We know crime has been a part of this situation. So there are those who say it would be better off to legalize it, maybe reduce the number, and then regulate it, possibly run it through the lottery. I'm not closed-minded about that, but I don't think there is the will to do it, and I think there are many good reasons to worry about legalizing it in places it doesn't exist now. And it is not the answer to our fiscal problems. The answer to our fiscal problems is the one we're taking. Control spending very, very tightly, and try to get the economy of the state growing.
Okay. Two questions coming from Fort Wayne. Heather and David. Go ahead, Fort Wayne.
Good evening, Eric. Good evening, Governor. David Scott, News Channel 15 in Fort Wayne. I'm here with Terry Gill, a department store worker here in the Summit City. She has a question concerning an issue that has been on the minds of many local people lately, and that is the Amber Alert system. We had the recent disappearance and murder of 10-year-old Alejandro Gutierrez, a case where the Amber Alert system was not used. Terry, your question.
My question is when a child is missing, regardless of what the situation is, and there's no description of a vehicle or an abductor, why is the Amber Alert not issued when we have a picture of the child? If I know that a certain child is not supposed to be with someone else and there's an Amber Alert out there, I can report that in. We can be the ears and eyes of the police department, but without a picture, we were no help this time.
this was a yet another awful and heart-rending situation. And each time it happens, you ask yourself what might have been done better, what might have been done differently. And Terry, I don't know the exact answer to your question about when the alert is and isn't triggered in these situations, but you've asked a good one, and I'll be certain to ask our state police and our security people about it. Thank you.
Another question from Fort Wayne. Okay, well then we'll take another question from here
in
the studio.
Question comes from Kent Schultz.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me now, Eric?
Go ahead. Yes, we can.
All right, thank you. My question now comes from Kent Scholes, and he is an educator, a 22-year educator in the public school system, one of them here in Allen County. And his question pertains to education and property taxes. Go ahead.
Well, Governor, my question is in regards to state support for public schools. State support for public schools from the actual state has decreased almost 14% over the course of the last 3 years. And as a result, property taxpayers are being asked to pick up the difference. And my property tax increases are outpacing my salary increase in a year-over-year percentage basis. I was wondering what can your administration do to help support public schools and yet not overburden property taxpayers?
Well, Kent, first, thanks for teaching. Secondly, I got to give you a low grade in one respect because your facts couldn't be more wrong. State support for public education has increased each of the last 3 years, and is now over 10 total spending for education in the state's over $10 billion, over $10,000 per child. It's something we ought to be proud of. In Indiana, folks dig deeper to support education than almost any state in America. We pay $1.13 of our income compared to the dollar average the average American pays. That's a point of pride. But yet many schools are still very strapped. Just today, we announced one of my major initiatives for the next 3 months, a program to move dollars to the classroom, where Kent and his colleagues are. Even though we are spending $10,000 per child in Indiana, we're not doing as good a job as we could of getting it where it matters most, where Kent meets students. Only about 61% of the operating dollar, not counting the cost of construction now, just the operating dollar, makes it to the classroom. In the best states, it's closer to 70%. And just think about that. 1% of $10 billion is $100 million. We could hire 1,500 more teachers like Kent, for instance, for every 1% improvement. And our schools need help to pool their purchasing power. They buy almost everything today, one school at a time or one district at a time. Sometimes we prevent them, for instance, from going together to purchase insurance or energy, things that cost a lot of money. In a lot of states, the state buys or sets a contract for school buses and gets a very good discount and then passes that on to the schools. We need to do these things so that there's more money available at the point where teachers meet kids. And one last thing, the biggest driver of property taxes increases right now in Indiana is school construction. We are 3 times the national average in terms of the weight it puts on the property tax. We found out that the average Indiana school building costs half again what the average construction project in schools nationally costs. Now, we all want great school buildings for our kids, but we may have gone a little overboard here, and we put some rules in place that said, hey, if you're above the national average, take a closer look. And close to $90 million came out of requests just this year for new buildings and improvements on old ones. So we got a long way to go, but I think we're all in agreement that education is as high a priority as this state has, and that we want to spend as many of the dollars as possible on teachers, on keeping classrooms smaller, on keeping textbooks affordable, on technology, on new programs where the rubber, as they say, meets the road.
Okay, we have another question here in the studio, keeping with the education theme, Ryan Tabor.
Governor, do you believe intelligent design should be presented in Indiana schools as an alternative to evolution theory?
Ryan, I certainly don't think the state government ought to be involved in addressing this. I think science teachers ought to decide what is taught, and I think that it appears that There's a general consensus now. As far as I know, this will not be advanced in the General Assembly. I think that we've got too many mandates in education now. Part of that program I just talked to Ken about would involve freeing schools from a lot of the mandates we have now. We tell schools how to do their job in many, many ways, and it takes time. It takes money that could otherwise be in the classroom, as I was describing. This would be one more such mandate, and I don't think it's a good idea.
Okay. Back to Mark Allen and Terre Haute.
Thanks, Eric. Our next question here comes from Charles Terrell of Shoals, Indiana, and his question is about daylight saving time. Charles?
Yes, Governor. My question is, you know, we've spent millions of dollars and hundreds, if not thousands of hours debating the issue of daylight savings time, yet, you know, we had more important things to do. Why did we spend so much time on this instead of other issues? And frankly, Indiana's voted it down so many other years. Why worry about it now when we had other issues to worry about?
Well, Charles, I wish you'd come out to BOMAX there when we had a town meeting in Shoals. We could have talked about it face-to-face. But thank you for a good and legitimate question. First of all, I hope you didn't spend millions of dollars, because I didn't and nobody else did. There was some time taken up, and maybe more than I would have imagined or wished. I'll just say what I did before. If you believe, as I do, that the number one goal facing this state is to create more economic opportunity for our kids and the kids that follow them, and that it is just not tolerable that Hoosiers have now declined to earning only about 90 cents for every dollar the average American earns, then you want to do everything you can do to improve that. This was not one of the biggest items. It was, but it was one that I know will make a difference. Some folks don't see it, but I've heard it 1,000 times about the missed and rescheduled meetings and conference calls, the salesman who had to sit around waiting because he got the time wrong, the trucker that arrived late for that shipment in Indiana because he didn't understand what the heck time is at this particular month. And sometimes it's more than that. I got a friend I work out with at Jim whose company lost $36,000 because a fellow in L.A. missed a conference call, and they had to compress a construction schedule by 2 weeks to make up for it. So, reason number one, it's about jobs, and even though it's not a big thing, it's one step we can take that's free. And number two, it was a pledge, and I feel like if I said I'm for something, I shouldn't walk away from it. I should try to see it through, and I know there must have been a better way to do this, but there was no easy way, and I think that in time, folks are likely to feel like it's worth doing.
Another question from WIBC.
Hello.
All right, we're here with Bill Boyd of Indianapolis, and do you have a question for the governor?
Yes, Governor Daniels. The $12 million study of I-69 determined that if I-69 were to be built, statewide we could potentially get 4,600 jobs by the year 2025. Now you claim by doubling the toll on the existing Indiana toll road and by making I-69 a toll road rather than a free interstate, you will get 95,400 more jobs than that. How do you account for the huge disparity in the number of potential jobs to be created?
Well, Bill, do your homework. Actually, the jobs that will be created if we spend an extra $3 billion on transportation of all kinds. According to the U.S. Department of Transportation, every $1 billion invested in roads and bridges eventually creates almost 50,000 jobs. First, you have people who build these facilities, and then you have businesses that locate near them. So I understand your confusion, but it is not a number that is assigned at 69 alone. 69 is just part, one of hundreds of major projects that we need to build to have a great economy in this state. Yes, I think it's important, but so is 31 to connect north central Indiana, where our South Bend listeners live, to the central part of the state. So is the Hoosier Heartland Corridor to connect some of our smaller and mid-sized towns. Anderson, Lloyd, and other towns like that benefit from being on an interstate highway, and many of our other towns need that same kind of access. So it's that whole combination of things. Bridges over the Ohio River, an area down south, we got some great opportunity to see a lot more growth around Clarksville, Jeffersonville, New Albany. So it's all that put together that estimate of 130, 40, 50,000 jobs attaches to. I don't know what the exact right number is. I just know that if we have a way, if we can find a way using mainly other people's money to build the infrastructure of the future, we'll have more opportunity, we'll have more of our kids staying here with us.
Okay, we have under 4 minutes left, and a question from Rob Gorbett.
Governor, do you think the Colts are going to win the Super Bowl this year? And if so, would you consider making Monday, the February the 6th, a statewide holiday?
Well, Rob, I do believe they're going to win the Super Bowl, and I have for some time. And if they win the Super Bowl, I won't have to declare a holiday because you won't go to work anyway, and I might not either. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else have something? Okay. Let's go back up here. We've got one more quick one.
Governor, I know recently that some of the people from Anderson and some people from your state office went to overseas to the middle, to the Far East, I should say, to try to drum up some business over there. Has anything appeared to come to light on that's going to happen?
Yeah, Lloyd. I think we had some quick success. We sold over a couple $100 million worth of beans and corn to the folks in Taiwan. When their buying trip came through, they skipped Indiana the last few years. They came here this time, and we sold them some product. But the real part, the point of the trip was to try to thank our good customers, 200 companies who are here in Indiana now, mainly from Japan, and tell them that we appreciate their business and we'd like them to grow here. I was over in Terre Haute and Aishin. Announced a major expansion about a month or two after we got back. We have very high hopes of Toyota, with whom we had a great visit while we were there, is looking seriously, as our friends in Lafayette and elsewhere know, at coming to the Fuji Subaru facility up there. I think we'll go back to Asia. I'm very much of the view that in this economy, if we can bring dollars from somewhere else, as in a toll road lease, by the way, to Indiana, dollars we sent overseas to start with, if we can bring them back here and put Hoosiers to work, I'm interested in doing it. Let me just say a couple things to you all and thanking you for your citizenship in being here. You know, more change maybe came to Indiana in the last 12 months than in any year we can remember, and I don't think we're at all through that. I just want to remind everybody of something that didn't change. We learned again that the biggest hearts in America belong to Hoosiers. And we saw it in the floods my very first week in office when we almost lost some towns down south. Some guardsmen saved the town of Hazleton and other volunteers helped. We learned it at Katrina, Elizabeth, when more Hoosiers went down to help per capita than any other state. And we learned it in the tornadoes just last month. And I just want to remind everybody, as those events reminded us, we are in it together in this state. And there's nothing we can do if we pull together. They're telling a story, and if it's not true, it should be down south, that some FEMA guy walking around with his clipboard 3 or 4 days after the tornado saw an unscathed house in the path of the storm said, "Isn't it funny about Mother Nature being so arbitrary?" And one of our Mennonite citizens down there said, "Torn't there 3 days ago." And you know, there's a lot that torn here a year ago in Indiana. I hope that's true a year from now. Thank you for your constructive criticism, but also your citizenship and being here to debate these things. That's how we'll move forward in this state.
And if that sounded like a conclusion, it was, but only for TV. Thank you for joining us, Governor Steve Simpson. We'll continue this on WIBC.
And, of course, the Network Indiana stations as well across the state, so we invite your phone calls.
We'll be back in a moment.